We're not going to fight anymore.
I'm also just a girl.
Dying to float.
Standing in front of a boy.
Such a great audience.
Put all y'all talkers up in here. Time to keep it down right now.
Hello and welcome back to When Cinephiles Attack, a weekly podcast where four movie fans test the limits of their friendship. I'm Rashawn and I'm here with...
Mella.
Josh.
And Lacey.
What's up, guys? How are you doing?
We're good. I'm good.
Cool. I'm good.
Chilling. Thank you all listeners for being here today. This is a mailbag episode. We really enjoyed the last one that you guys sent in. And so we're doing it again. However, before we get started, we have a very important announcement. So this show has meant the absolute world to us, and it has been a nearly four-year-long journey that has introduced us not only to a new outlook on film, but the most amazing people along the way. Listeners, collaborators, fellow movie lovers, you all that just press play today. It is a tremendous commitment and not one that I take lightly in the slightest. So please believe that this was not a decision that was reached lightly, but When Cinephiles Attack will be coming to an end. I love the show. I love the show. I love this show so much from the bottom of my heart. We debuted at the height of quarantine and the start of the pandemic, and there was just the need to create and connect, and it was huge and massive, and the show filled that space in all of us, and hopefully all of you. Every day, I cannot believe how lucky the four of us are for the amount of love and support that you all have shown us. It's beyond anything I know I can speak for my co-host, anything we all could have ever imagined. And we're still a very small, modest show, but you all make us feel like the biggest and best show on any platform, anywhere. So it's not an easy decision, I promise you guys. But producing a podcast is very hard. Rachel Sennett had a whole monologue about it. She's right, you know? There's spreadsheets and scheduling, and it's a big undertaking. So I promise this is not the last episode we are telling you all today, but we still have about a month's worth of episodes to record and release and still be there with you guys to walk you through it. Honestly, to walk me through it, because I'm not going to handle this well. But we will be dropping the final episode this coming April. I always wanted to start and end the show with just complete transparency and respect for the listeners. So we will do just that. We will end for now. Never say never to the future and what iterations we could return in podcasts and video and written. But at this current moment, When Cinephiles Attack, as it is, will be coming to an end.
Yeah. You know, I like to get my opinion in, so I'm going to say something too. I know you prepared something, but this is off the dome.
No way. You didn't prepare something? You're going to improv it?
Yeah. I mean, like Rashawn said, it's very difficult, but like the three of us have said, Rashawn does this pretty much on his own. He might edit this out. I'm going to say it anyway. Rashawn's a phenomenal writer, filmmaker, playwright, and the goals and dreams are starting to materialize a little more. So I think we all are in agreement that passion is great, but Rashawn's true calling is filmmaking, and we are all in 100% support. This was not Rashawn going, I'm done. I just want to make that very clear that Lacey, Mel, and I also are in full support, and like Rashawn said, never say never, but also the four of us aren't going anywhere as humans, so Letterboxd and Instagram will be there. Follow us like we say every week. We'll still be posting and talking about movies. If you guys want to chat movies, it's we're not going to delete our Instagram on April or in April. So
we'll April be here. First. All content gone.
But like a good TV show that has its final season planned, we also have our final season planned.
Period. You said it beautifully. I couldn't add on anymore.
No.
Okay. We love you guys so, 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 so much. And don't ever want to disappoint anybody, like my co-host, the listeners, people who love movies. I love movies, and as much as I love talking about them, I can't wait to make them. So this is for the best, but we won't leave you.
We won't leave you hanging.
We won't leave you hanging. I promise. Having said that, we got an episode ahead of us. Thanks to you all. We got some questions to answer.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mailbag episode. We asked everyone to send in anonymous questions. Spooky. And we will just be hanging around the pod, hanging around the mic, answering some questions. Yeah?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Has anybody been watching anything?
I just started Shogun. It's fucking great. It's on Hulu/FX. The initial elevator pitch that it was told to me, and I subsequently told to everybody else, that it's Game of Thrones with samurai. But the show creator himself has said that he believes it's closer to Succession than Game of Thrones, just based on the family intrigue and the political conniving that happens in it. And out of respect for him, fucking, if that's what he wants to pitch it as, great, because it rules.
Watch, started, finish, ate up. Like, we'll probably watch it again one day, the series.
What is,
I blew through that. Based on a book by the same title, and then it was made into a movie with Anne Hathaway and Jim Sturgis. And then they're like, fuck it, let's make it a show. It stars Ambika Maud and Leo Woodall. It is so heartbreaking. It's not a light watch by any means. But it's definitely... Lacey, have you seen it?
I started it. I'm like okay. 4 or 5 episodes in.
So, you know, it's just yeah. like... It's a quick... It's an easy watch, I guess, in the sense that you just want to keep going. But it's not easy in content because it is pretty heavy. The show or movie, I guess it's the same. It spans 20 years of their lifetime.
Well, then why is it called...
Why did you mute yourself halfway through?
Because that's funny, right? It was funny, right?
Comedic timing. You have to watch to find out. But I watched Normal People, and then I think 2 weeks later, Ooh. This came out. And I'm Ooh. Like, I'm just fucking killing myself here.
Carmela, who hurt you?
I know. So if you are a romance girly, or I don't know, you just are in the mood to watch something kind of, I don't know. It just, it's like just a really good bowl of chili. Like, that's how I can describe it. Like, you just feel full, but you also feel warm. And it's just, it's good. That's how I would, that's what I would say.
And you're still feeling it the next day?
Yeah, you're still feeling that shit the next day. Whether it's heartburn or dookie, you're feeling it.
Jesus Christ.
Also, the main actors are very good to look at. So that's always a plus, too.
I guess speaking of chili, I saw The Taste of Things. This is a French film starring one of my, I don't really talk about her a lot, but I really love Juliette Binoche. She plays a chef's assistant, and she's in a relationship with another chef, and they kind of navigate their relationship in and outside of the kitchen. The first 30 minutes or so of this movie is shot like a fast-paced action sequence through a kitchen where they're basically preparing this grand meal. Do not, I said this to Sam our last episode, but do not watch this movie hungry, because oh my god, my mouth is just like watering. It's so delicate, but also so intricate. And I really like to cook, but baby, I was put to like, I've never cooked like that. That was crazy. It was crazy. It's so good. It's romantic, but a little bittersweet. And I think Juliette Binoche is just a gift. She's amazing. She's never anything less than explosively radiant and good. All the adjectives. It's great. So if you have a chance to catch it in theaters or watch it at home, The Taste of Things, it's very good.
What? Real quick, before we open the mailbag, I just wanted to say, as of today, while we're recording, IATSE and Teamsters are now entering negotiations with AMPTP, and we fully back them. Not, literally nothing gets made without IATSE and Teamsters. So get everything you're asking for and more. WCA fully supports it. If you strike, if you win at all, if you become the new AMPTP, holy shit, whatever. Pro Teamster, baby.
We got quite a bit of questions. Some of them we have gotten before, but we're still going to answer them because every single listener is awesome and important. Let's do it. Mm-hmm.
Starting off, what is the movie you're most afraid to bring to the pod? I said nothing. I think the whole point of this podcast is to like bring what you love and then we all fight about it, right? Like that's our whole thing. I think I've been hesitant in the past to bring something more so out of, I know I love it. I don't care to know what they think because I love it so much, or I don't know. Like it just might just be like a treat for me that I don't feel like is deserving of a pick apart. But not really. There hasn't been like fear behind it. What about y'all?
Same. I read that question and I was like, if you have listened to any of my episodes, I lay my heart on the line for this podcast. There are movies that are like special to me that like I have connections with my grandma with, or I have connections with my dad with. But like if it came down the line and that was what, you know, that's what came up, I would totally defend it to the ends of the earth. But it was never fear. It was more like you said, Mella, more sentimentality.
When we got this last time, I think I might have said Bruce Almighty. I think I might have. That was the one for a long time, but more so because it has such a special place and I hadn't watched it in so long. I was afraid that a rewatch would like ruin that. Spoiler alert, it fucking didn't. That movie rips. So aside from that, if I had to pick one, it would probably be Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, because I wouldn't want to watch my two friends do that to each other. But
we're gonna settle this rumor, this myth, by the end of the show. I swear to God,
that'll be the last episode. God damn it!
But genuinely, like I conquered that fear this year, so I'm good.
Rishani?
Moonlight. I will not talk to y'all. I don't even want to hear the lukewarm shit.
I would be so afraid to say something wrong during a Moonlight episode that I think it would just be bad TV, but I'd be so afraid to say something during
episode. I don't know if it would be an episode. I'd just sit there stone cold waiting for somebody to open
it. Phone recorder on.
Yeah. I have Barry. Go ahead.
On that note, what is the deepest cut movie you enjoy? One almost no one has ever heard of.
So mine for this one, I really thought about it and it's, walk with me here.
Okay.
So this one is very generationally specific. I think a lot of people, a lot of millennials, a lot of our generation know this movie. And I think some people may like it. I don't know a soul on Z, Alpha, X, Boomer. I don't know any other age group aside from like our general one that has even heard of this movie, let alone likes it as much as I do. And that movie is Hancock, starring Will Smith.
Oh my God. Not expecting that.
I saw it opening weekend, and then as soon as it came on DVD, Walmart had this deal where it came with the DVD and his beanie. And I think I had it at AMDA. I had it for a long time. It had Hancock's little striped beanie with the little eagle on the front.
No one else had that beanie, so you were good. You're
good. Back me up, Rashawn. It's got Charlize in it. Hancock.
Yeah, I fucking love Hancock.
Let's go.
Wow.
It's one of the weirdest fucking movies ever made.
Hell yeah, it is.
Anyone else have a deep cut?
Lacey does.
Lacey.
Does Lacey have a deep cut?
She's like, which one should I choose, bitch?
Which vintage animated movie should I talk about today? I am going to talk about the 1962 movie called Gay Paree.
Huh?
It is spelled purr, P-U-R-R, dash E-E. Gay Paree.
Huh?
This is a movie with the voice talents of Judy Garland, Robert Goulet, Paul Frees, and Red Buttons.
Paul Buttons.
Sorry. Bleep it out. Sorry. It is the story of Judy Garland, pretty little kitty named Musette, who longs to go to Paris and be a fancy kitten in Paris. Listen, I know I bring weird shit to the podcast. I am aware. But this movie it's a masterpiece as far as artwork goes. There is an entire section of this movie where Judy Garland sings a song called Little Drops of Rain. And there's a montage that takes you through the different stylings of different artists. So there are scenes done in Monet's expressionist paintings. There are scenes done in Van Gogh's stylings. It's just like a feast for your eyeballs. It is, of course, silly. It's a cartoon from 1962, and it is quite it's kind of like watching anything from 1962, you're like, how the fuck was this a cartoon? Because she's like given to a brothel and like to be sold to a man cat, you know, all of the and she must be rescued by the tomcat of her little town that follows her, Jean Tom. But it's great.
A man cat. Like, I don't know if I've ever heard those words together.
A male cat.
No, a man cat is different than a male cat.
It's really great. And I, like, you can stream it. I believe you can rent it on Amazon Prime, but I just refuse to watch it on anything other than my VHS tape.
Yeah,
because it just doesn't feel the same, but it's so good. And if you watch it, please send me a message on Instagram so I have one other person in this world besides my dad who I can talk to about it.
Rishani?
I wrote a couple down. I think I've talked about this movie, The Death and Life of John F. Donovan.
Mm-hmm.
This is an Xavier Dolan movie with Kit Harington and Jessica Chastain, Jacob Tremblay. Just a weird fucking movie about an actor that I really fucking love. The Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby.
Yes, I love that movie.
Yeah, His, Hers, and They. I don't even know if you can find all three versions, but I remember that the year it came out, I was like, I gotta collect these like the motherfucking Infinity Stones. I have to watch them. Blank Man is superhero kind of satire. The Living End is a really great 90s queer film that kind of inspired something I'm working on right now. And The Five Heartbeats is also a faux kind of temptation like group of R&B. I don't know. It's a great movie. It's just a black classic.
It was always on TV.
Always. Yeah, yeah.
I originally didn't answer this question, but then Lacey got the ball rolling in my brain. This is a childhood deep cut, and I know you've seen it, bitch. I know you have. It's Mary Martin's Peter Pan.
Fuck!
From like,
yes! Carmella!
Loved that movie. I thought it was so weird and like somewhat a little creepy because it's a theater. It's live theater.
Yeah.
And it's obviously like in the 1960s, so it's not like the greatest quality. I haven't seen it in maybe 20 years, but I just feel like it's such a deep cut. Like, if you've seen it, you've fucking seen it. If you haven't, you're not going to see it ever again. But so much of my childhood is that, watching that movie.
Yes.
Another one is called Chemical Hearts. It's from 2020. It has Lily Reinhart and Austin Abrams. Mm. And it's just an Amazon flick that I saw just, you know, I was at home just flipping through, trying to find something. And I saw both of their names and I'm like, that's weird. I've never heard of this. And I've watched it like 3 times since. I think they're both really good. Say what you want about the YA content of the movie, but it's a romantic film with 2 great leads and I keep going back to it. So that's my pick.
Next question asks, what is the best creature design you've ever seen in a movie? I wrote a couple down that stick in my head, either because they scared the fuck out of me or I think they're just really well done art. Vincent D'Onofrio in The Cell is really a hot.
Oh my God. That's another question.
I know. It's just weird. And J-Lo's a child psychologist stuck in the mind of a serial killer. And the things that he comes up with in his mind. Tarsem Singh is a really great visual director. And the way that he constructs all of those sequences inside of the mind is really, really good. These 2 movies have really great creature designs as well. Starship Troopers and Attack the Block.
Yeah, dude, Attack the Block.
And there was a movie in 2020 called PG Psycho Gorman. Really weird little movie about 2 kids who discover this murderous alien serial killer. And they kind of fall in love with him. But most of the effects in the movie are practical or mostly practical. And I thought the design of Psycho Gorman and also the other alien creatures that are after him were really cool.
I got 2. I'll do the predictable one first. The Quiet Place. I love those monsters. I love how they run. Their big scythe of an arm and how their kind of face opens up to get more sonar receptors in there kind of adds to the lore of them being entirely sound-based. I love that. And I'm going to say it, okay? Not enough people talk about it because it's too obvious. But E.T. is a really good design, okay?
It is.
E.T. is great.
His big dumb head, his long fingers, his big eyes.
But he's also great. Like, if you saw that, you'd be scared, too.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
But it's so, like, duh. But E.T., man. Come on.
I like when he has the wig on. That's
cool. Me too.
Josh. I put for practical Splice. Have y'all seen that movie? It's weird.
Have you seen Doom Part 2? You've seen Splice.
Really? She's Austin like this bald-headed alien, has a tail, but then has titties and is kind of sexy. And like Adrian Brody falls in love with her. Like it's a very weird, specific type of creature, but I think it's really well done. And then the artist on that is Howard Berger. And then for more like CGI effects, I think the bear in Annihilation, which we've talked about, is absolutely sickening. I looked it up real quick just to make sure, and I was like, yeah, that's gotta be the answer.
I thought you were just saying the bear.
The bear. Just turn me on and
away. Cousin.
I've already talked about Pan's Labyrinth at length. I think both the Fawn and the Pale Man, the frog, and the little root baby. I think some of the best practical and CGI effects that we've seen in movies. But I wanted to answer something different because I've talked about those at length. And the first thing that came to my mind was the mermaid from Cabin in the Woods. We get at one Cabin in the Woods just has a that whole segment where we're getting to see all of the different creatures and nightmares and threats is awesome. But the mermaid is such a subversion of what we're expecting to see. It's a subversion of what the characters are expecting to see. It's this, it's literally like a blobfish. And I just think it's, I think it's one, I think it looks so cool. I think it's executed so well. And I think it serves the story in such an impactful way because the telemarketer, not telemarketer, the guy, the whole time is like, well, if I'm going to go, I want to be taken out by a mermaid. I want to be taken out by a mermaid. And then we see it. And it's a nightmare.
All right, next question. What already existing movie would you cast Lacey in as every character?
This was easy for me.
Fucking devious question, whoever submitted this.
I think she has to follow in the footsteps of Cher.
No!
And not West Side Story, but I would like to see her do every single part, including the company, in Rent.
Oh!
You thought I was going to say Mamma Mia, but no, bitch. It's got to be Rent.
I thought you were going to say Phantom.
Rashawn?
So I thought about this. I thought I was going to think about this very hard, but this movie immediately popped into my head. Walk With Me Here. It's a sequel to a movie that I don't know is very beloved, but the sequel is definitely not beloved.
So Mamma Mia.
It's called The Huntsman Winter's War.
Oh, now, fuck.
The reason that I chose this is because it stars three fantastic actresses, of which I think Lacey is. She would embody Emily Blunt, Jessica Chastain, and Charlize Theron.
Oh, and that's they each... a tall order, Sean.
You could do it, hush. They portray a warrior, a queen, and the queen's sister, who is obviously jealous and manipulative, and they... each embody things that I think Lacey does really well as an actress. And then she can butch it up and play Chris Hemsworth and fuck herself. So it's great.
Something she's talked about wanting to do for a lot of time. Yeah.
What?
Which
is
one?
Happening? I'm so uncomfortable.
Lacey, do you have an answer to this?
No, I didn't answer this. I don't know. I Alice great. In Wonderland, I would play every part in that.
Who framed Roger Rabbit? Next question.
Period.
Okay.
You're also playing like the card.
Y'all know why?
Yes.
Josh.
Because Jessica Rabbit. She also got to play that the bug-eyed motherfucker with getting rolled over.
That'd be sick as hell.
I would happily do Matilda.
That's fun as
you as a trunchbull would be a lot of fun.
Yeah. You with the girl with the pigtails swinging yourself around.
Cutting back and forth. You, a de-aged you. Yeah, we got a repeat question here, and I'm very glad this is a repeat question because my answer has changed since the last time.
Oh.
So I'm going to ask, again, I'm going to ask all of you first because I foot down, I'm the expert on this. Who are we as the Ninja Turtles? Who is each of us as a Ninja Turtle? The four main turtles assigned to each of us.
I cede the floor because don't hate me, but they kind of blend together.
Especially for
the colors or
the colorblind folks.
Okay.
Both. Well, I'll go with whatever you guys say.
I had to pull up a little Venn diagram on Google Images because I didn't know them without the colors. So I said Leo, who's blue, Leonardo, the leader is Rashani.
Mm-hmm.
Purple, Donatello, Donnie the genius, Lacey.
Well.
Michelangelo, Mikey. The funny one, me, duh, stay laughing. Raphael, Raph, the rebel, Josh. That's red, the red one.
That's what I said too, but I don't see the who am I? I don't. I only know the colors.
You're purple.
I'm purple.
Donnie.
I don't see Donnie as the genius. I see Donnie as the one with the glasses who's a little nerdy. Then
so,
I identify.
Yes. So, so yes. Yeah. So I believe our consensus last time was what Mel just said. Tie those laces up because we're going for a walk. So,
oh my goodness.
The sort of surface level, yes. If we go by the classic 90s theme, Leonardo leads, Donatello does machines, Raphael is cool but rude, and Michelangelo is a party dude, right? I'm going to get the first one out of the way. Listeners, this is just in relation to the pod. The dynamics may change a little bit in real life, but this is where we're at. So, Rashawn is Leo. That is correct. He's our leader. We go to him first. That's Leo blue. Leo can get a little hot-headed sometimes.
Thank you.
The reason that Splinter gave Leo katanas is because they're the only weapons that the four turtles have that can kill. And Splinter needs Leo to be level-headed and be the leader. And so he has... I digress. So, first is Mel. I actually gave Mel Donatello, the purple one, because... Donatello, yes, he's smart, he does machines, whatever. But Donatello is the least combative of the four by a pretty considerable margin. He's always looking for a reason not to fight. And Mel, historically, on the pod, you have been the one to be involved in the least amount of fights, right?
Yes.
Yeah. You're not saying Donatello is swayed, not you're saying you're swayed, but you're able to sort of get your hands up in between everybody and avoid conflict.
Okay.
Lacey is Raphael. Hear me out!
Red.
Raphael is...
Because I'm angry?
Is the quickest to anger.
Because I yell?
Is the quickest to conflict.
Right.
Spoiler alert. In The Last Ronin, he is the first Ninja Turtle to die because he goes into a fight without thinking.
Mm.
Right? And Michelangelo...
Lacey, no, bye, damn.
Michelangelo is the most chaotic of the group. That is also, again, that is why Splinter gave Michelangelo nunchucks. He's the orange one, nunchucks. Because Splinter needs Michelangelo to learn some self-control, to stop being so chaotic, to kind of hone it in, to maybe pre-write something before he starts talking. So that is my list as to why we are the Ninja Turtles that we are. And if you disagree with me, objectively, you're wrong.
We will talk about this off the mic.
For the pod. Again, this is for interpretation in our real life personalities. But in terms of the pod, I'm locked in on this one.
I can see to the fan.
Yeah.
Yes.
I know.
No way, the one in the Ninja Turtle shirt is right. Yeah,
I literally have a Ninja Turtle shirt on right now.
Now a question for me. When was the movie better than the book for you? I mean, this is a question for everybody. But when was the movie better than the book for you?
I'll just get this out the way every time. Because... I probably haven't read the book.
This is kind of a cheap-ish answer. It's not cheap. I want to say, one, this is a limited series and not a movie, but this is my answer, is Hawkeye. Hawkeye, the miniseries on Disney Plus, which should have been a movie, based on my favorite comic book run of all time. Didn't land as well as the book did. Sorry.
No, it's when the movie.
Oh, when the movie is better? Oh, sorry, I read it backwards. Probably, I don't know, like Oppenheimer?
Have you read American Prometheus?
No, but I'd imagine Oppenheimer's better.
Joshua.
With that screenplay? Available. I said if Beale Street could talk, it is very hard to adapt James Baldwin. I don't know if I would say better, but I do think it's a very good adaptation. Same with Dune. I don't think the movie is necessarily better, But I do think it's, you know, it changes things, it cuts things, it keeps things the same, but it's the best adaptation to film that I think you could achieve, and Denis was great for that.
If nothing else, it's more accessible.
That is very true.
I could convince a lot more people to watch Dune than I could to read it.
And then, because I can't go down without a fight, Gone Girl.
Too.
Oh, shit.
Okay, great.
Oh, wait. No.
Editing Rashawn play war like is over. Oh, wait.
No. I got it backwards like Josh for that one.
Oh, no. So it's, you feel the exact opposite.
No, the book was better than the movie.
That is categorical.
Editing Rashawn play war, what is it good for?
Did you read it before you saw the movie?
Oh, my God.
I read the book first.
And you still think the movie is better?
I know the movie's better.
You know who else does? That is an opinion!
Gillian Flynn, who wrote the screenplay for the movie. She knows it's better.
Oh my God.
What? Is it my turn? What's the next question?
I didn't get to answer yet.
We've been doing this for 4 years. Come on.
What's your answer?
The Notebook, for one, which I said on our Notebook episode.
You did.
Far more enjoyed the movie than I did the book. Pretty much anything Nicholas Sparks, I like the movie better than the book. Oh, I'm scared to say this one. I'm not going to say it. To Kill a Mockingbird.
That's fine.
Oh, I see why you would be scared to say that.
Yeah.
I haven't seen
so
that.
So you can edit that out.
The Mockingheads be vicious.
I'm going to keep it because it's Dune Spice.
Keep it. Who fucking cares?
No, I'm afraid now.
I don't know if there's like a huge To Kill a Mob. I think you're okay.
To Kill a Mob.
I really have tried. I tried in high school to like the book because I loved the movie so much as a kid. I've tried in my adulthood. I hated Ghosts at a Watchmen, whatever the fuck it's called, the sequel.
Cut to Lacey hosting SNL with musical guest Harper Lee.
And the last one I will say is Fried Green Tomatoes. The book is okay, but I really love the movie.
Mm. Simon.
Oh, what about Simon Birch? Y'all remember that one? That's not my answer.
Fuck out of here.
Stupid. Next question. Any other podcast recommendations?
I got two. One movie related, one not. Just because it's my favorite podcast. The Not Movie is My Brother and Me. It's just a stupid giggle podcast. Or three comedians answer like WikiHow questions. That's it. The movie-related one, Lacey put me on, so sorry if I took your answer, Lacey, but Script Apart.
Yes.
Still your answer.
No, it's okay. We can both talk about it.
Yeah, you can talk about it because you introduced me to it, but Script Apart is fantastic. Take it away, Lacey.
Yeah, Script Apart is a podcast where the interviewer has on writers and screenwriters, and they talk about the process of developing a script or a story. And it starts with, you know, how the first draft evolved, their process. If you are interested in storytelling, in development, in how movies you enjoy came to be, it's just great. Mike Flanagan's on there, of course, and I loved his episodes, but it was actually really interesting to listen to him talk about how he bridged the gap between The Shining and Dr. Sleep. And he has an episode on Midnight Mass, which is fantastic. Really great episode on May, December, Nightmare Before Christmas, that he kind of does a gambit of categories as far as writing and screenplays. And it's really interesting to listen to.
He also has a really nice voice to listen to.
Yes.
Yeah.
The host?
The host.
Yeah. Oh, buttery.
Yeah. Rashani, I know you be in your podcast big.
I do. I'm not going to list a bunch of movie podcasts, but what Lacey just mentioned is a great one. I'll just name two because I'm rooting for everybody black. Sibling Rivalry with Bob the Drag Queen and Monet Exchange. Not that these need promotion.
Yeah, same. Yeah, we're just podcast.
And Black Men Can't Jump in Hollywood. It's just a really great movie podcast with a unique perspective. I think a lot of movie podcasts in particular are, you know, three or four white guys sitting around talking about movies. And these are two black men who offer maybe just a different side of things. Those two.
I listened to this one called When Cinephiles Attack over and over and over again.
Same.
That's kind of where I'm at, so.
Same. I've fallen off my podcast bag, but because of Libby, I have started picking up audiobooks more, which has been kind of fun for me. And it's a way to keep that that book goal for the year going.
Also, good friend of the pod, Soundtrack Your Life, if you're into movie scores, music, whatever.
They just did a great episode about the original song category at the Oscars. This is another question that we've had before, but I changed my answers a little bit. What is your biggest pet peeve in movies?
I thought of one that I didn't talk about last time, and I hate this so much. I hate in a movie when the kiss finally happens and they do that thing where they don't just let the kiss happen. They do like eight jump cuts of them coming together to kiss. And it's like, okay, we're going to kiss, cut, and kiss, cut, and kiss, cut. And but you can tell it's a bunch of different takes of them doing the kiss. And like, why? Why?
That means the kiss isn't good. That means the kiss sucks.
Right. Is that why?
It's got it. Yeah. If it was good and they had chemistry, the kiss would just hold. That means the kiss sucks.
If the shot of the kiss is like from behind them, I'm fucking done. I hate it so much.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that.
I think I said, I'm sure, I don't remember what I said, but I'm sure I talked about driving.
Yeah.
Eyes on the road, stop moving the steering wheel. Another one I don't like, specifically in action movies, if you are holding a pistol, if you lock your elbows, I hate it so much. You see it a lot in like cop movies where it's like the main character is a cop and they're a cop for the whole movie and then they pull their pistol out at the end for like one scene. It's like, okay, they didn't do firearm training because they're just holding their pistol. It's a pistol with locked elbows. It's like, okay, you're gonna fucking have fun being in a cast when you pull the trigger once. Like, it's a little bend. There was no one on set that could be like, ooh, bend your elbows.
Right.
There's no one. No one could do that. It drives me nuts.
One of them is unavoidable, but I just don't like it. Unless it's funny. And that's ADR.
Oh, yeah.
Because you can always tell.
Always can always tell. But I know it's a part of the process and post-production, so I get it. And then the other one, I don't know how to reckon with, but it's the way that we censor violence versus sex. It just doesn't match up. I don't know, the way we give an NC-17 or R rating to a movie that has intimacy between two people, but you know, John Wick be tearing up Paris and London. So I don't know. It's weird in what we accept and what people are conditioned to watch. And
it's very interesting. I watched a video. I can't remember who did it, but a long time ago. It's interesting. Japan and Japanese movies are like the exact opposite. Like, there's a lot you can get away with, like a lot of sex and simulated sex and romance and sort of promiscuity and not really push the rating too much. But like, someone pulls out a gun, and it's like all the way up to R. It's very. It's like the exact opposite. It's very interesting, and I fully agree. Like,
what's the balance?
Yeah,
mine is when we have like the main character. It usually happens like thriller or horror, and we've been in this journey this whole time, and then we get to the end, and they're like, "Ha ha! He's actually a bad guy. Let me rewind the whole film and show you what you missed."
So like in flashbacks and shit,
and you're like, We didn't miss anything. We've been here for 2 fucking hours. Surprise, surprise, they do it in Saltburn. Spoiler if you haven't fucking listened to any of the episodes so far. But that's one of the things I don't like in that movie. But I hate it. It just makes me feel dumb. You are showing that you don't trust the audience. You're adding in little things that you're like, oh, well, you didn't actually see him do this, but
yeah,
he
like,
did it.
And like you're in like, action movies, if they like pick someone's pocket, but it was never in frame. So it's like, right. how was I supposed to know?
But yeah. Like at this point, I don't need to know because now we only have like 15 minutes left of the movie and it's, I already got it.
I never would have thought about that. They do that. They do that shit all the time in heist movies, boy. Let me tell you
all the time. And sometimes it's like necessary and like
right
in little moments, it's like funny or cool or whatever. But I think like when we've been with you for the whole journey of the film and now you're recounting steps, I'm like, bro, we've already seen that shit.
Yep.
Okay, y'all. I'm down bad. Can you pitch a meet cute for a little rom-com?
I bet I could. I didn't write anything down for this.
The wing in it.
Do you want me to go first? Do you guys have something written down?
No, I mean, take your time.
Picture this.
Okay.
You're at a county fair.
Cute.
Love it already. Love a fair.
You with your best friend. Ring toss. Bingo. Cotton candy. The whole nine.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is in the Midwest, obviously.
Right.
Obviously. Oh, shoot. Your best friend's boyfriend is here. They go off. You're like, okay, I'm just going to do one more lap. I'll see you tomorrow. Thunder cracks. Oh, shit. Downpour. Like Midwest.
My
downpour.
Fucking hair.
Downpour. Closest shelter? Ferris wheel.
The Ferris wheel? Okay.
Run in. Oh my God, oh my God. Covering your whole head. You can't see anything. So you just run in. You're in. They close the door. It starts going. Cutie's across the box from you.
Wow.
Yeah, you're in the Ferris wheel. Pouring rain. You're at the top. You can see lightning in the distance.
I love it.
I crushed that shit, dude.
You heard it here first, you guys. Josh thinks Ferris wheels are a good place for romance. Go back and listen to the Notebook episode.
Well, if both party members are consenting to being on the Ferris wheel.
Ryan Gosling's hanging.
Maybe that's why I just thought of that because you mentioned the Notebook. My bad.
Rashani, you have one?
In a world.
Ooh.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay, we have two perpetually single people who are so sad, down on their luck, because their birthdays are coming up, and they just got recently dumped.
Mm.
So with the push of their respective best friends, they decide to take advantage of all the free birthday giveaways that you can possibly get in the city of Los Angeles.
Yes.
So they run into each other at the start of the day at an IHOP, where they're both getting a short stack.
Mm-hmm.
And then throughout the day, the race picks up and they start bumping into each other at coffee shops and cupcake shops and roller skating rinks. And they're like, wait, is it your birthday? It's my birthday. And then throughout the day, the race becomes competitive. They team up and then they end their birthday together at night, sealing their newfound companionship with their first kiss. This is BOGO.
That's fucking cute.
What'd I tell you at the top, dude? He's a writer.
Write that shit. Lace?
C.S. Lewis once wrote, one day you will be old enough to read fairy tales again. So my meet cute happens. Person A has lost their grandmother. Person B has lost their grandfather. Both of them were read the same fairy tale in their childhood. They go to their local bookstore and they both reach for the same copy.
Cute.
Of The Princess Bride.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
I don't have a title.
You're pretty good.
Me either.
The Princess Bride's Secret to
Workshop.
Nope. Hold on. Hold no. on. The Princess's no. Bride. No, it's not good. With the apostrophe. Princess.
No.
We'll think go back it. To the whiteboard. Okay, so we have our girl Kat. She has the same routine every day. She goes to her favorite coffee shop with her dog. She takes a walk. She goes to the dog park. On this specific day, she goes to her coffee shop and she knows exactly what she wants to order. She's standing in line, two people ahead of her. There's this fucking guy who's complaining about his coffee order. It's not hot enough. There's only one shot of it, one espresso, yada, yada, yada. In this specific movie, we're only hearing Kat's thoughts. And she's like, damn, what a fucking prick, right? So she orders her coffee. She throws a dollar in the tip jar. She's like, have a nice day. She goes to the dog park. As she's up at the dog park, she's standing around watching her dog play. And she hears a phone ring in the grass. And she's like, what? So she goes to picks it up. And she's like, hello? And he's like, hey, who's this? And she's like, it's Kat. Who's this? And he's like, it's Sunny. I guess I left my phone there. Would you be able to hold it for me while I come pick it up? And she's like, I guess. So she's waiting at the dog park, and then we get a montage of different men coming in through the dog park, and we can hear all their thoughts. And she's like, ew, hope it's not that one. Kind of, maybe. And then in through the light is this beautiful man. And who is it? It's fucking Sunny, the guy from the coffee shop from earlier. So she gives him his phone, and we'll see what ensues.
Cute.
Title?
Sunny and Kat.
Whoa. Good job, everybody. Off the
Good
top
job, guys.
Each of us is coming off the premiere of our movies, and everyone is obsessed. What is your first brand partnership?
Barnes & Noble.
Reese's and Smartwater.
I said Coca-Cola and Dior.
Oh, we can do two? Is this a judgment-free zone?
Mm-hmm.
Guinness and Jameson. They are consistently the two products I consume the most.
He's drinking them both right now.
Did you say Smartwater?
Yeah.
Someone's got to.
I guess, yeah.
Jen Ann is tired. She's
That's
relaxing.
Right.
I'll take over.
You should do Evian. Evian's the best quality water.
Blech.
What?
Smart water.
Dasani. Just kidding.
Oh.
Wait, Mel, what did you say?
I said Coca-Cola and Dior. Both.
What if Coca-Cola
scented Dior?
Ew.
Ooh. Or Dior flavored.
I can totally see Mela turning over her shoulder for a Dior commercial in her big flowy gown.
And then pulling like up a
running through the clouds.
Pulling up a dewy, crisp glass Coca-Cola bottle Period. In the gown.
I just farted.
Good thing no one can smell it.
Thanks, Dior.
Go, go, go. Fucking huge belch. Cut to black. This is a big one. Who is your favorite SNL actor / contributor? If we're talking modern, if we're talking the current cast, I think James Austin Johnson, the guy who does both Trump and Biden, he's like a wildly good impressionist. And I think Ego Wodum is like by far the funniest person on the cast. If we're talking all-time cast, I got a Mount Rushmore. I got four. It's the obvious. It's the obvious. It's Farrell, Farley, Wig, and McKinnon.
Mm.
Obviously. And if we're talking host, I got two.
Who?
Adam Driver.
Yep.
Unbelievable. And hear me out. Chance the Rapper consistently has some of the funniest sketches I've ever seen.
I don't think I've ever seen any of his.
Him and Donald Glover, hysterical, and Adam Driver. Those three, unreal. Anyway, I'm an SNL purist. I could talk about the golden years for a long time. So why don't you all take over before I start rambling?
I said Kristen Wiig and Maya Rudolph, Ego Wodum, and then Tina Fey for Weekend Update.
Yeah.
I did Molly Shannon and Maya Rudolph. I think, I mean, they are just, even outside of SNL, like, their career has kind of, like, paved the way for so many women comedians. And, I mean, myself included, they're two people that I would want to even get, like, a sliver of their career. So, definitely both of them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Will Ferrell seems obvious for me. I love him so much. But Bill Hader has become, like, a full... Like, he is what I think of when I think of SNL. Rachel Dratch, I think, is one of the unsung heroes of SNL. I think everything she does is so genuine and funny. And I love watching her break. I think it's so funny to watch her break. Yeah, those are my
two. Also, I mean, also Keenan. He's the longest running cast member of all time. It's he's like
he is SNL.
He literally is kind of like in his own section of like, well, yeah. Right. It's like kind of where you're talking. It's like, well, yeah, duh, Keenan. But here, who else? Like, it's he's always just there.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a kid, I had the best of Will Ferrell SNL. Like, there's like four editions, and like I would just watch them on repeat. All the DVDs.
I had the Will Ferrell DVD.
Yeah, Will Ferrell, and I had him. I had Chris Farley. I think I had. One Adam Sandler. I would just like Sunday afternoon, I would just pop them in and watch them all on repeat.
I'm a loser. You guys.
Yeah.
Congratulations. We've won the best podcast of the year.
Yeah, fuck no you, Smartless.
Yes! Can you please give us your acceptance speech?
I'm going to go first because I didn't write one. I would just automatically pass the mic to Rashad.
Yeah, no, that's actually what I would do, too.
I would just be, like, in the back. But I did
write one. So go ahead, Rashad.
I would just say thank you to the three of you. Thank you to the listeners. Thank you for pressing play, and let's go to the movies.
Period. Aww, and everyone would be so happy because it would be the shortest speech of the night.
Josh, did you have one?
No, I would also. What do you mean? What do you Whoa, so everyone thinks I would grab the mic and start jabbering. Okay.
I just wrote one just in case.
I would, genuinely, I would. If I had to say something, I'd say, like, thank you and give all the credit to Rashad.
Read it, Mel.
I said, oh my God, you know, we're up in the mic. We're excited. Firstly, thank you to Rashawn for putting this together. It could have never happened or stayed consistent without your hard work and dedication. And then I will look at him and then he'd be like holding his chest, like wanting to cry. And then I would look over to you two. And I said, thank you to my two other co-hosts who have kept it fun and ridiculous and exciting for the past 3 years. And lastly, to our amazing listeners that have stuck by us all this time, we didn't think we'd have even 50 people listen to this, let alone win this. And then I'm lifting the award. We truly, truly couldn't have done this without you. We love you.
Aww.
That's way better than anything I would have come up with. So let's go on to iPhone. <Sweet. laughs>
This is a fun one. Rank who would be the final girl in a horror movie between y'all. From first out to final person.
May I recommend for our answers the least horror watching to the most? Like with the Ninja Turtles, we end on the expert, yeah?
Yeah. So I'll go.
I'll go first. Yeah, I think you watch it more than me via your proximity to Rashawn.
Right.
So to me, Melly, you're gone, dude. You're.
I knew it. You're gone. I know it.
Like right away. Then I think it's me next trying to do some quasi-heroic shit to prove that the killer cannot be bested by, you know, physical force or just aggression. You have to outsmart him. But then to prove that he's smarter than you think, Rashawn, you're out next. And I think the sweet, innocent white girl is left standing because this is a horror movie.
So I said, honestly, I think I would be the final girl. Because
okay. Talk about it. Let's
you
hear.
Think that I would be the first one to go.
For sure. Yeah, I did.
I think Lacey's actually going to go first. And not because she doesn't know what to do, but because we need to psych the audience. She would be the Drew Barrymore. She would be the Samara Weaving. She's like sitting in a window, like knitting. And then she gets like jabbed with like the needles. And we're like, what the fuck? And we're like, okay, we're in, right?
Okay, so this is a new age horror movie, not no new tropes age. Allowed.
Movie's called All Up in Knots.
And then I do agree with you. I think Josh is going to fight too hard and it's going to work against him. And like the killer's just, it's going to get you.
Like head against the wall. Like
yeah, just bah, bah, bah.
He's crazy.
Yeah. He's crazy. And then I think Rashawn has fought the good fight. He dies really respectfully, like, go on without me type of shit.
Not Gandalf like, the Grey, Jesus Christ.
The hand. And, like, it's the last 10 minutes, and, like, the audience is like, no, we really thought he was going to, like, live. And he's, like, the whole, like, emotional crux of the movie.
For sure.
And then you have me, bitch. No one suspects it. I've been dodging kills left and right. I'm covered in blood. It's 2024. Black people are making it to the end, period.
Yeah, mine was real trope heavy.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
I actually think Josh and I would go at the same time because we are a happily married couple. So we would be committing.
They'd get us while we're fucking.
They'd get us while we're fucking. Oh my God, the rules. We break the rules. So I think, how cool would that be though to get the couple out first, a 2-for-1. And then I think Mella and Rashawn, you guys are fighting it out till the end. We see all of our friends drop by the wayside. Raymond, Sam, Thomas, Lyndon, they all go. But damn. You two are consistent. And you two are there. You make it to the end. And right as you think you're about to succeed, Mella gets a stab in the back.
Fuck.
From Rashawn?
No.
Oh.
From the killer.
I was going to say,
twist. Metaphorical stab in the back.
From the killer. And Rashawn, I think, with all of your knowledge, with all of your skill, with all of your charm, you would be our final.
Mm-hmm. Rashawn.
My order is completely identical to one person. Carmilla.
Oh, ah! Shoot.
I do think the 2024 and onward subversion of horror movies would reverse the natural order, kind of what Josh did. Lacey is the Samara Weaving. Josh is the brawn that we have to get out of the way. You would think I'm going all the way, and then Mason Gooding should have died. Mm-hmm. I would die at the final stretch, and then Mella is all too rare woman of color as the final girl.
Yeah. And I want, you know what I want since I am the final girl? I want that same like I'm wet but my hair's not. You know?
Yes. It's raining all around you, but it's not touching you.
Perfect. Yeah. If they can get it, I want it.
Also, yeah, pouring rain. The blood is not washing off.
No.
Fresh it's blood. Stuck. But it's like stuck. Why is the blood not
everything around me though? Next question is, what is each of your favorite I forgot the word, like brand, family movies, like Indiana Jones, Shrek, or Austin Powers.
So like, I love whoever this series. Is.
Yeah. I love this person.
I think series, franchise,
right? Franchise, yeah.
Mine is simple. They listed 2, so I put Shrek, Austin Powers, and I think at one point it was Harry Potter.
Austin Powers is up there for me, for sure. Recency bias, the new Planet of the Apes trilogy. It's the one I've watched the most recent, but I love all 3 of them, like, equally, and so that's mine. But Austin Powers is also fucking no myth. No skips.
How to Train Your Dragon.
Yes!
Outside of Scream, obviously, I would have to say no skips, Mission Impossible.
My boy!
Damn!
Wow.
Very consistent, very, very good. Except for all that AI shit.
You're going to get to see Tom Cruise kill AI. I'm ready for it, dude.
I'm cool. Crazy. If there's one person that can do it.
He's going to do it.
Next question says, what's one type of movie that you never need to see made again? I hate to say it. I hope I don't sound ridiculous. Superhero movies, get them, purge them with fire. We're done.
We're done. Let's take the Western route. Let's put them away for 50 years.
And that's all we got left.
No, I'm with that. Let's. Put but them
I feel
away.
You. I feel you. Yeah. But we've gone from, you know, modestly made, kind of bad to great peak, and now we're back to them being oversaturated and quote unquote bad again. And I'm just like, I don't want to do this again.
Chris Evans kind of threw some shots. Did you see what he just said?
He did, yeah.
He said if superhero movies were easy to make, there'd be more good ones.
Sure.
Yikes.
Interesting to say, now that you've cashed your check.
My type of movies is A Star is Born.
Is what?
A Star is Born. There's like 100 of them.
Yeah, okay. Again, it's like, we've seen it.
We've seen it.
Yeah, that's true.
Make the three that we pitched in our episode, and then got it.
We're done.
I don't necessarily not want them made anymore, but I would prefer to see movie musicals done a la Hamilton, a la Waitress, versus trying to make a movie musical. So I would rather see the Broadway shot, right?
Was it called like a pro shot?
Yeah. I love a movie musical, clearly. I've brought most of them to the podcast. But I would really love to see Broadway be more accessible for people who are not there. Yeah, I would just like to see more pro shot musicals versus movie musicals.
I'm down with that. I don't need to see another slave movie made. Like, I am super good on them. You've seen one. You've read a book about it. We all know what happened. I don't fucking need to see another one. So, from every black person in the world,
how are white producers supposed to feel good and get an Oscar?
Yeah, right. Like, let's talk to the white producers.
Right. Right.
You guys learn your lesson in a different medium.
Please.
I don't need it.
We don't need it. We're all set.
Josh.
Yeah, I am prepared for this one.
Oh, my God.
Whoever sent this in.
Oh boy. They've been listening.
Yeah. I'm ready for this one.
Josh. Fuck, Mary Kill, Lola Bunny, Bill Murray, Brad Pitt.
Let's get the easy one either way. I'm fucking Lola Bunny. Obviously. Let's get that out of the way.
I hate it here. So I hate it here.
That's crazy. That's a fuck.
I hate it here.
Look.
I don't ever want to hear anything about my taste ever again.
You like mice and skeletons. What are we talking about?
Bone Daddy. Continue.
So I'm marrying Bill Murray.
Hmm.
Hear me out. His marriage is just like a partnership. And Bill Murray, at this point in his life, he might do a movie a year. Other than that, he's just crashing weddings and getting up to shenanigans. And if I can do that on someone else's dime, hello? If I'm riding his jet, crashing parties with him, he's picking up the tab. Let's go be goofy. You know?
Yeah.
Brad Pitt, I need you to say the words then.
I'm killing Brad Pitt. Look, listeners, if you were paying as much attention as I wanted you to, you wouldn't have put Brad Pitt.
What would they have put?
Colin Farrell.
Yeah.
You're marrying Bill Murray.
That one would have been trickier.
Josh Murray.
Josh Murray.
Torture. Absolute torture.
Being married to Bill Murray?
Yeah.
Just kind of get up to goofy shenanigans for a few years. And then
I gotta wake up to another joke. And it's not funny.
Talk to Lacey about that, dude.
I was gonna say, Lacey's everyday life.
Yeah, he's not Bill Murray.
Another bit? Another at 8:30 a.m.?
She just opened her goddamn eyes.
Literally.
All right. Rashani, this is for you.
Okay.
Your ghost face.
finally.
Someone has wronged you and it's time for revenge. What do you do different than many other ghost faces that have come before? What do you do the same?
Okay. Here's the thing. All of the killers, the main killers in the Scream franchise, are related to another killer in the franchise. There are two, for me, that got the closest to completing their goal. And those are the cousins. And that's Jill Roberts, Roman Bridger. They had the right idea. Roman, he directed a movie and he killed the cast. Mm-hmm. Jill had the right idea of killing all her friends and making herself the final girl. Mm-hmm. But I think they both made the mistake of jealousy and needing to explain their motives. Like, hush. Just hush.
We don't need a monologue.
We don't need a monologue. Do your murder shit, cover your tracks, and beat it. They will never find me.
And okay.
If you guys want to send this recording to the FBI, please feel free to do so. If any of the three of these people on the mic with me go missing, come back to this episode. Yeah, just hush. I think the biggest thing that I could do different is not need to find Sydney and tell her why I did it. Just.
But isn't that their sort of the driving force? Isn't that what like eats at them at all times?
Yeah, I guess maybe not killing Sydney, but needing her to know why. Like, if you want to kill Sydney, just kill her and be done with it. But you need her to like sit down and.
So, yeah, I was going to say, like, leave a voicemail.
An audience.
Yeah, yeah, leave a note.
Leave a letter. They'll put it in the movie that they make.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. great.
Please don't turn me in.
I would think, I know this was for you, Rashawn, but I did think of something that I would do differently.
Mm. Okay.
I would use a gun.
I'm fucking sad.
He does, for a second.
And in these last two, he's gunned
lots
up.
Of guns.
Shotgun, baby.
I would not miss.
And those elbows are bended in these
yeah,
two.
He's trained.
Breaking, Titanic 2, it sinks again.
Oh, no!
Now, with all these years later, with the knowledge of the past, the debate roars again. Do Jack and Rose make it on the door together?
No!
Yes.
No! Yes. Is it the same
they
door?
They have to.
Then no! We've been through this. They try in the movie.
They don't try!
Yes, they
don't,
do.
They barely try.
Because it dips right away.
He's just like, I'm like, get your ass up here.
You can look on Kate Winslet's face in that quick moment. She remembers that she's rich and he's poor. Get off the door.
They try.
Wait, okay. So wait. So wait. I need clarification on this question. So is it the same movie? Is it the same people? Is it the same circumstances?
I took it as it's like now times. They redid Titanic. It's out in the ocean. The same shit happens again.
Oh.
Right. Mm. But, I mean, it's how you interpreted it.
Then no. I mean, the best part of the movie is the tragedy of it. The tragic loss of love.
What if the tragic loss of love is they both survive, make it to America, and realize they don't really have anything in common? And
I just... know there's no chemistry!
And then he's stuck there. She can just get like a new place because she's rich and he's like back on the streets.
They're trying to survive in a studio apartment in the Upper West Side.
That's tragic, dude.
Okay, I think like if this was to happen now, we would all follow it. Like the whole submarine bullshit that was like last year.
Oh my God, yeah.
And like everybody would be super into it. We'd be talking about it. We'd be like watching the live coverage because all these people are rich, right? Like, assuming
so, we would have no choice but to be given coverage of it.
Yeah, we would be like rooting for these two people on the door, and if they sank and they didn't make it, or like only one of them made it, we'd be like, y'all suck. Like, we would have no remorse. We would just be like, well, we fucking told you, you had like 20 years of information. Like, y'all suck.
Not like not us seeing footage like a helicopter watching a dude drown on a door. And now throwing a ladder down.
Fucking Instagram like, polls.
They're like, figure it out.
TikTok Live. Thank you for the galaxy.
Who watches the most foreign films the most out of you all?
Should we say it all at once?
Yeah, one, two, three.
Rashawn.
I just, it's not for lack of wanting. I've watched more foreign language shows than movies, but I don't know. It's just Rashawn.
Yeah. It's my New Year's resolution and I haven't started yet. It's
Can I tell you?
I invited you. You were like,
can I be honest with y'all real quick? You can leave this in, Rashawn. The best thing about us calling it quits on the pod right now is I haven't even fucking started my New Year's resolution.
God damn it.
That's the best thing.
So I don't have to reckon with you guys being like, did you do it? A Criterion. What was I thinking?
We always go real big at the fucking beginning.
Oh, dude, I don't have to deal with that shame.
I have not read a single book to movie adaptation yet.
I don't have to deal with that shame at the end of the year, man. Let me tell you what. Smooth sailing.
We'll come back. I will put the mic back on. Just to shame you.
Anyway, yeah. No, it's Rashawn.
Yeah, I love them. I don't think I'm like the biggest foreign film watcher, but I do like them a lot. I have seen, they recommended Anatomy of a Fall, which I think is amazing. And I'm seeing Perfect Days tomorrow, so, so thanks for the recommendation. Well,
I'm excited for this question.
Lacey.
Yeah.
And Mella.
Yes.
Scenario.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would you rather take care of a 5-year-old Josh and Rashawn or 5 Josh and Rashawns? I'm assuming adult.
Yeah, it's gotta be.
Easy for me.
Okay.
I want 5-year-old Josh and a 5-year-old Rashawn. if you have listened to the podcast at all, we know Rashawn was just the sweetest little baby angel that ever was. So he would be a piece of cake. And I love you, so I will probably have a little one of you someday anyways. I've seen you as a child with those cheeks. And
no punk ahead.
Even if you're angry, you're so cute.
You better up your snack budget, bitch.
As if it's not already astronomical.
I know.
That'd be a fun experiment. Who eats more, a 5-year-old me or like a 32-year-old me? Mel?
So yeah, I choose the 5-year-olds.
I originally had the same answer as Lacey, but...
Yeah, you have a little gay black kid.
I know.
That's your dream. My dream.
And then like a little terror that's Josh. But then I would keep Josh little.
You can't mix it.
I can't mix it. I can mix it.
No.
No, you can't.
I'm point. Saying you can. That's I want to hear the point. Rest of your answer.
That's the point to an every either or.
It's two different people.
So you're gonna pick which one are you keeping, a baby?
I'm keeping you a baby.
And then 5 adult Rashawns?
With a beard.
With a beard.
Because she's going to make one of the Rashawns take care of the kid.
But no, you're taking care of 5 adult Rashawns. So...
I'm taking care. No, I don't think you're taking care of 5 adult Rashawns. There's just 5 adult Rashawns around.
Like, no, it's would you take care of 5-year-old us or 5 adult us's?
Mm.
So you got 5 diarrheas coming at you. And then a baby me. I'm assuming you're taking care of Rashawn's diarrhea.
Why does he have to have diarrhea?
Okay,
why
fine.
Can't he eats cheese.
It's like
my tummy hurts.
My tummy hurts.
I just live with 5 Rashawns.
Right, but you have to take care of him. That's the prompt.
She did.
She has been
the past couple
weeks. Yeah, but 5 of him, and
does
these
he
ones
ever
have,
get better?
And these ones have diarrhea.
Oh my god. But okay, then I'll keep 2 little nugs.
2 little what?
Little nugs. I'll keep baby Rashawn and baby Josh.
Yeah. Make them fight. Set up a little ring.
Don't fight, we'll be fighting.
Beat my ass, what do you mean?
I was like a little Ferrero Rocher with legs back then.
Oh,
like,
so cute.
I did not, so like, cute. I was 200 pounds in the 8th grade.
Oh.
I was, oh my God, I can't imagine.
Yeah, that. And then I got tall, and then it just kind of stretched out like a piece of putty. But dude, I was a big boy.
You could still, you could take me. I was on the playground talking about I want to be the Pink Ranger. You got this one.
Okay, here we go. What's the hottest someone has ever looked in a movie? The listener used two examples of Mia Goth in Infinity Pool, crazy, and Swayze in Roadhouse. Not as crazy.
He looked good.
I'll go. I also have two. I have a male and a female. What do you guys want to hear first?
The male.
That Henry Cavill in Mission Impossible.
Yeah. Oh, fuck.
And the female is Rebecca Ferguson in Mission Impossible. The scene in the dress with the sniper rifle. Done.
Yeah. The opera. Yeah.
A bisexual's dream. Brendan Fraser and Rachel Weisz in The Mummy.
Let's go! Just the cast of The Mummy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All of them. All of them.
The mummy himself.
Anaxunamun.
I said Halle Berry and Die Another Day. Penelope Cruz and Vicky Cristina Barcelona.
Damn.
Real crazy, but very hot. Brad, Legends of the Fall, Jesus Christ. And then Harry Belafonte and Dorothy Dandridge and Carmen Jones.
Dude, Halle Berry and the Flintstones, bro.
Yo!
Sharon Stone?
Yo!
With that little caveman cut out tight to the body. No shoes. Whatever. That's not my
answer. And she's hot for John Goodman? Forget it.
I basically want to be her. But, so I have James Marsden, obviously, but two different movies. I have
Wait. Can we guess?
Yeah.
Sonic the Hedgehog.
I haven't seen it, but he's so hot.
Enchanted's got to be one of them, right?
No.
What?
My James is different than her James. So I don't know.
Lacey, what do you think?
Oh, I would guess The Notebook in his uniform.
That is correct. Him leaning against the car. He's all better now with the accent. Sign me up. And then my other one is Straw Dogs.
The fuck is that?
Fucking crazy.
Look him up. Take a moment. Just look at him.
That the movie as a choice is fucking wild.
He's wearing just like a regular like university tee, little curly hair.
That's it? Mella, what are you talking about?
What? He looks like a normal guy there.
He's in uniform in Sonic the Hedgehog.
No. I just want him to look like a normal guy. And then for Lady, I chose Marilyn Monroe in Niagara. Oof. She's fucking phenomenal in every shot.
Have y'all ever seen James Marsden with a buzz cut? Mm-hmm. Mel, let's come. I got it. Send it to the pod, Mel. This is for you. I mean, the
what's that one movie, Nicholas Sparks? Doesn't he have a buzz cut? Yes.
There you go, Mel. Send it to
him. He can do no wrong.
Mary Stuart Masterson and Mary Louise Parker on the bank of their little pond in Fried Green Tomatoes.
I have a dig with a wig.
Why do we need wigs in the first place?
I have a dig with a wig.
Turn the wigs around.
And you know that's supposed to be a wig that he's wearing.
I have a dig with a wig. I have a
crunchy wig.
Throw it away.
That's a good word, that wig.
Baby.
But it's a wig.
This wig, mama. I always have a dig with a wig. But now I want to hear what y'all's is. What is the worst wig in cinema history?
Every fucking wig in Twilight New Moon.
Bad.
Yeah. Bad. Everyone had their normal hair in Twilight, and then they got a budget, and everyone got the worst Party City wig possible.
But doesn't even look combed out.
No! They didn't even shake it when they took it out of the bag.
Like one of these?
Yeah.
From the top?
Aye.
Mishani, do you have one?
I have three. Julia Roberts in America's Sweetheart. At the end, I think they're doing reshoots, and they put they pull her hair back and put her in this hideous wig. It's Julie Roberts. How do you do that to her?
Yeah, whatever. Like, she's known for her hair.
We've talked about the absolute treason that is the cornrows on Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Oh, I thought you were going to say what mine was, but that's awesome.
And then the entirety of Tyler Perry's A Fall from Grace. Just
like
abysmal.
Like his career the past 10 years?
Oh,
or is that God. A movie title?
It's a movie.
Leave it in! I didn't have one when we first got this, but I mean, kind of bouncing off Rashawn's. There is, because I'm notoriously, I don't, like, if I know it's a wig, then it's a bad wig, but I'm not as good at that. But for movies that I do know and I can see it, there are some times, and it's just random, it depends on the movie, but sometimes our good old Captain America, Steve Rogers, Chris Evans, it's like, oh, that's a wig. Same with him and his makeup.
Except the Infinity War one.
Yeah.
The long, like Loki,
it's purring. The long hair.
Loki's wig at the start. I think by far Shamar Moore, another really bad quote unquote cornrows wig, is the worst thing we've ever seen. Take a second.
Diary of a Mad Black Woman.
And look that up, yes. Not quite sure why the scalp on the wig has hair as well. It's
holy
very
shit.
Strange.
It's and so bad.
It's such a shame because it's Shamar Moore who's like absolutely stunning. And then you throw on this garbage.
Why would they do that?
So bad. It's better when he has a bandana in some scenes because you can't see his edges.
Yeah, it covers up. Yeah, I'm looking at that right now. Oh my God.
There's some scenes without the bandana.
There's also, I think I've mentioned this before, but Julia Roberts again in another bad wig in this movie called Mother's Day. She's in this like super tiny orange bob.
Fuck ass bob.
What the fuck, you guys? Why? And you would think because she's a mother and then like her kids have red hair, but nope, they don't. She's just in this fucking ugly ass wig.
Can I ask you, Mel and or Rashawn, is a good cornrow wig, is it just like kind of clear mesh in between the cornrows? Is that ideal? Or like what? Like how, like to me, the idea of pulling off a cornrow wig seems impossible because the scalp is so prevalent in non-wigged cornrows.
Look to Drag Race. Because some really great black queens pull it off, but also, you know, their entire art is illusion,
right?
So it's the believability is less important.
Yeah,
but I'll kick it to Mel.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I just think it's a really hard thing to make believable, right? Yeah. Like, because you have to like shellac the real natural hair down to put on this thing that looks like the hair is braided. Right.
Are there like cornrows on a bald cat? Like it?
Yeah, like similar. Like,
yeah.
To that point, I would just, as the director, or hair person, or whatever, just be like, "Don't choose this hairstyle."
Yeah.
That's it.
We're not doing it.
We're not doing it. If we can't really braid his hair, choose something else. Like that's all.
I don't think there's ever been, or to my memory, story reliant cornrows.
Period. No,
right?
No.
Yo, what's the worst movie you've ever paid money to see?
Cats. 2019. Walked out, went to go see Little Women, no regrets.
Oh, good choice. I really thought about it hard. The only one I can think of was it 2 or 3 years ago when we went and saw the live action short films for the Oscar nominations?
I didn't go, but yes.
There were two in there that I can't say they were bad. I can't. They were Oscar nominated.
But
they were very, very hard and painful to watch, and I didn't feel prepared for what I saw.
And the cinematic payoff wasn't like worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel you. No, that's, yeah. That's a
good
answer.
Feel like, and maybe it was on me for not doing my research ahead of time and reading what they were about, but I feel like we have a responsibility as artists, as storytellers, to provide trigger warnings if things are going to be as graphic and violent as they were in some of those films.
I can't think of anything I spent money on. Honestly, the first thing that came to my head, I saw The Pacifier in theaters with my family. So maybe that, but I didn't pay for it. Shouts out to Mom and Dad. Thanks for the ticket. So The Pacifier.
I was at the movies every week when I was a kid. I paid to see Corky Romano. This is a Chris Kattan star vehicle.
He said, I love SNL.
And then during the kind of boom of J-horror remakes, I saw One Missed Call. And sheesh, man, that was bad. It was a bad one. It was a bad one. Maybe ask for my money back, bad.
Ooh, damn.
Like those that. Those were the two, like. Oof. We've reached the end. We got one more question. I thought this was fitting to kind of end the Q&A with. This is probably something we've talked about and or you can probably find on the list of our episodes, but was there a film that you can remember that started your love for film?
I'll go first because mine's probably the most well-documented on the pod because we had a whole episode about it. It's I Am Legend. With Will Smith. I had loved movies and I wanted to be an actor, but I was like, yeah, I'm fine just doing stage, whatever. Not that, that sounds reductive. That's just, if that's what you want, that's what you want. But when I saw I Am Legend in a packed theater and saw what it did to the audience and what it did to me and like what movies could be, I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, this is it. This is it. Like, this is fucking insane. This is great. Because, like, back then, you know, I was still in high school when it came out. So I stuck to watching flashy, you know, action movies and comedies that, like, landed and I loved, but didn't, like, I didn't kind of take a step back and see what movies could do. And that's, I Am Legend did it for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go to war for that goddamn movie and its sequel. I don't care.
I have kind of, like, a mismatch of things because I think like as a kid it was more so like performance based, like, oh, I'm watching this movie because I want to become an actor, and that would be as silly as it is, but Superstar with Molly Shannon. I just thought, like,
yeah, dude,
she's so silly, she can do whatever she wants, like she's not afraid of like looking stupid or getting the joke. And then also, you know, obviously The Wizard of Oz, because of its, like, you know, all of its technical achievements and it just being a complete masterpiece of the time and being like, anything can be a movie. And then I think, like, as I got older and seeing Real Women Have Curves and seeing America Ferrera, who kind of mirrors what I look like, you know, you have this curvy Hispanic girl who is the main character, and I was like, oh, they do that, okay, I can do that. And then also Titanic, where it's like this huge film, like it that is cinema. That just felt like one of those movies, like very similar to Josh, like, oh, this is like a mega cinematic movie. So kind of just like a mix of all that.
Like Mella, I have so many that spoke to me, that ignited my love for film. But what a movie from a young age that made me want to tell stories and made me feel like I could tell stories was Now and Then. Seeing a coming-of-age movie like that through the lens of girlhood that wasn't painting nails and and sleepovers and fluffy, you know, it was a ghost story and a true coming of age exploration with different family backgrounds, both angry and loving. And it was one of the truest depictions of female friendship that I had seen in film. And it did, it just, it made me feel like, oh, so my stories are important. There are people like me. And it's okay to be a little spooky. It's okay to be a little weird. It's okay to be a little sexy. It's okay to be a little safe. And you can do all of those things in one story.
This is one of the first episodes we did on the podcast, but I just remember as a little kid seeing Soul Food and recognizing my family on the screen and being like, oh my God, they're making food, and she looks like my grandma and my mom and everyone I know in my family. And then that 1-2 punch of Vivica Fox watching Set It Off. I remember a lot of movie viewing experiences, but this was one night, Friday night, my hamster died. I know it sounds so stupid, but I like realized what death was through that moment. And I remember just sobbing on the stairs in my house as my mom like cleaned out my hamster's cage. And like we went downstairs, sat on the couch. I like laid in her lap and sobbed. And then my sister put on Set It Off. And there was like a weird chemical reaction of me accepting death through a hamster and then watching that movie with these four powerful, amazing Black women on screen that just like altered me. I don't know. I can't explain it, but I'll never forget that night in that moment. That by the time I got to Scream 2, I was like, wait, this is a movie in a movie about people who love movies. It broke, my brain exploded. I don't know. But that was when I was like, okay, I want to do this for the rest of my life. So I can't wait, because this is the best thing in the world. So I think those three movies definitely shaped everything that I am and that I make.
Mm-hmm. Are the trees high enough, baby? Leave it so high your feet won't touch the ground. Would you look up, baby? It's pineapple purple skies. Promise of
a day. Okay, guys, we did it.
We did it.
That's our Q&A, our final mailbag for the show. Like I said at the top, thank you all so much for these past 4 years. Thank you to the three of you. We have 4 or 5 more episodes coming your way. We're not done right now, but trust us when we say that, you know, we are so grateful for you, and we're so grateful that you'll be with us for these next few episodes when we bring this amazing, life-changing podcast, honestly, to a conclusion. So thank you. Thank you to the three of you.
Thank you.
Love you,
Michoni.
I love you. That's it for this week's episode. But you can find us on Instagram at Cinephile Attack, Twitter as well. Email us. That email's not going anywhere, at When Cinephiles Attack, if you just want to talk movies. Find us on Letterboxd, Lacey ABV, Josh Vetter, Mella _ Bell, and the Simba tattoo. Hit us up on Letterboxd. We will always be there. We will always hit you guys back up.
Follow for follow.
I promise. Follow for follow back. and this might be the end of the show, but this is not the end of the relationship that we will have with you guys. So thank you so much, and we will see you next week. From Rashawn,
Mella,
Josh,
and Lacey.
Bye.
See you later.
Thank you.